everyone, and welcome back to the Business Smashy Show. Sadly, Lubna Hamdan is not here. She is off sick, so I will be taking her place. And of course, joining me is Waleed. Hi, Waleed.
Good morning, Farah. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? So before we start, we have a lot to cover and unravel. So our headlines for today are the unified GCC visa could be implemented by year end, which is very exciting.
Cross fingers.
Yes, of course, we've been waiting for this. And as well, Dubai to introduce 30-plus parks in the coming year. And Saudi Aramco plans 31 billion dividends payout despite Q1 profit decline. And Dubai hosted 5.2 million tourists in Q1 2024. Dubai is Dubai. But first of all, hi, Waleed. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How is your day?
Great, great. Been an excellent week, actually. First couple of days at the Dubai FinTech Summit, and you know, wonderful event, and it keeps growing every year. This year, for the first time, we actually had a small little booth ourselves at Keeper presenting over there. But it was wonderful, extremely well attended. A lot of big names sharing their experience in the fintech space and startups. A lot of investors in the space, enablers in the space, also were well represented. So excellent couple of days behind us, and you know, you go to these events and, yeah, and you come out feeling like the future is bright. They a lot of positive energy, I think, over there, and I personally found a few sort of people I was looking to hear from, present, you know, standing space only attendance for some of them. So a lot of positive to take out of this event. Very, very well done event.
Tell me some of the big names that you've seen at the event, because I'm sure everyone is like, you know, people go and they meet a lot of good people. So tell me.
A lot of the regional startup heroes, as we can call them, in this space. I attended a panel that included founders of you know, unicorns like Kareem, like Tabby, like the owners of Botan, talking about the scale up of their businesses. And it's always interesting to tap into and hear about stories of people that were successful in probably one of the most complex things in technology, which is financial technology. Some of these names, of course, are household names now, millions of users in the region. So certainly for me, that is of high value, but I also made sure to attend the fireside chat of the founder of Revolut, which, if you may know, is probably the single one of the handful of extremely successful digital banks out there.
For sure.
Banks, and that was one I made sure to attend and listen to. Typical fashion, he was quite stoic, but I think it's an understated sort of feature in founders. Certainly very knowledgeable and shared that knowledge quite openly. So that was definitely a good session for me.
I mean, honestly, it is amazing. I wish I was there as well, you know, because like,
as you said, every year.
I know. I wish I would have joined you, but you know, because like technology is actually the future, and you know, a lot of like we often do, let's say, try to avoid that in a way, try to maybe disregard that in a way. But as you said, so what have you? What did you say is the key thing that you've learned at the summit?
In the event, well, I learned definitely about a lot of innovative products that are trying to change the world. The problem with finance historically was that it is sort of dominated by old, very well established banks that move extremely slowly, and a lot of cases with very frustrated consumers that don't get what they want out of the bank. And one of the funniest comments I saw is nobody raves about their experience at the bank, right?
That's true.
Okay, yeah. It's just an evil you have to go through, and it's always been the case. And the fact that a lot of these fintechs made the provision of financial services pleasurable, right, enjoyable, I think is a key takeaway, is that if they did anything, they took the customer into consideration and utilized technology to better serve that that customer in a more convenient way, in a friendlier way, in a way where, you know, they're treated as a customer rather than, you know, somebody you have to deal with and, you know, you want to get rid of at some point in time. And I think that was, you know, that was the trick. That was where fintech actually makes the biggest difference, in my view, is on the consumer front and how it actually deals. And all the way through, in all layers, you have, you know, the fintechs that address the high end of the market with wealth and investment products that are doing it better than, you know, the traditional banks ever did. But you have all the way down onto the blue collar unbanked category, which there's tons of solutions have come up over there. And it's such a huge target market. It's just that the banks never had particular interest in banking them, and huge missed opportunity over there.
Did you get like a brief of like what the future of banking might be like?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of talk of AI and what AI would do across the board, from, you know, the back end and how it's going to increase efficiency. I mean, it has already actually increased efficiency on a lot of fronts there, all the way through to the front end interface and how they deal and understand consumer behavior and consumer engagement and interaction, all the way through to even more complex things such as assessing risk and KYC and AML related solutions. So definitely AI was quite strong over there. But I think something even more mundane was important for us to tap into is, you know, the reluctance of regulators and slash, you know, the legacy banking operators in the market to, you know, push and adopt new technology, and how sometimes, you know, you need to keep lobbying and pressure and sort of drag them kicking and screaming into adopting a more open and a more accommodating sort of regulatory structure for these solutions that are demanded by the consumer and that people are innovating to provide.
I mean, AI terrifies me. I'm not ready for that, but let's jump to our stories. So as we said, that the GCC visa could be implemented by year end, which is very exciting for everyone, including you and including I as well. You know, we talked about it before the show. So by the end of the year, regional countries will implement a system for the unified GCC tourist visa, announced Khalid Jasim Al-Mutfa from the Sharjah Commerce and Tourism Authority, SCTDA, during the Arabian Travel Market on Monday. Abdullah bin Touq Al-Mar'i, the UAE's Minister of Economy, stated that the regional tourist visas will be named GCC Grand Tours, allowing tourists to spend over 30 days in the six countries comprising, you know, the GCC. Now, he said that this initiative will make travel to our region more accessible and cost-effective for tourists. He noted that as well. Of course, this is a very exciting thing for everyone in the GCC country.
I mean, I think we've all been waiting for it. Yeah. I have a venture in the tourism industry in the UAE, so I'm particularly interested in developments like that from a personal point of view. But you know, generally from an economic point of view, we have amazing attractions across the GCC today. We've opened up significantly. We've highlighted that treasure trove of attractions that we have, for example, in Saudi Arabia, in areas like Al-Ula, for example, which has always existed. But finally, right now, you're starting to see traffic going into there. The angle is, you know, there's mobility now in the tourism industry across the region. You can plan a longer period of time, visit more places, see more attractions, learn more about the region, make sure the region is interconnected in that way. The idea is you watch a sports event in Qatar, then you spend you know, a few days in Dubai and Abu Dhabi enjoying the attractions over there, do a cultural trip to Saudi Arabia. There's, you know, the packages that you can create out of this are just wonderful. Go mountaineering in Oman, you know, I can go on and on.
Yeah.
And it's just offering it as a unitary offering, as a broader region to discover and to learn about and to experience, with a lot of diversity and depth in it. By all means, not a minute too soon.
I agree with you, actually, because like if someone is visiting Dubai, they're going to think of like, hey, why don't I just like go like pass by quickly to Saudi or Qatar, which is like maybe an hour or maximum 2 hours away. So I think this like tourist visa is beyond brilliant. And it's, I would say, very much needed. We're all excited.
And hopefully it's a piece of a bigger puzzle of further integration, actually, in these economies, which is always something that you would want to see.
What are you hoping for?
I mean, even, so for me, passporting, it's called passporting. If I have a business in Abu Dhabi, I can do business in Qatar. If I, you know, and I'm automatically licensed. If I have a central bank license to, give credit in one place, I can passport it into another. A little bit more around, you know, you might be familiar with certain rules of passporting in the EU, for example, which helped a lot of companies grow beyond their borders very, very quickly. For startups like ourselves, you know, it opens up a much bigger market for us instantly. So these are some of the integrations I would love to see, of course.
Well, you never know. You never know, because like, you think of one thing, but then the GCC just like shocks you and they come up with like a new rule and they're like, oh, wow, that's what we've been waiting for this for so long.
Hopefully so, that momentum continues. Yes,
we're hoping so. We can keep our fingers crossed and just like hope for that. So our next news is Saudi Aramco plans a $31 billion dividend payout despite Q1 profit decline. As I said, Saudi Arabia's state-owned oil giant Aramco is set to pay out $31 billion, which is 116 billion, I would say, Saudi Arabian
riyals,
of course, in dividends to the Saudi government and its superholders, despite a decline in earnings by 14% for Q1 reported on Tuesday. And according to Reuters, of course, it's impacted by lower oil prices and volumes that were sold. So if you can give us your insight about that.
Sure. I mean, the decline in profitability is not surprising because it's very, very highly correlated, as you mentioned, to the price of oil and the production levels. Average price of oil for the year probably would be around the same ratio. Lower than the average price, for example, for 2022. So that follows through. Now, the dividend, I believe vast majority shareholder of Aramco is the Saudi government. Mm-hmm. So to a large degree, that shareholder determines the distribution as well as the profitability, of course, of the company and the cash available to the company. And I think that is highly guided also by the budget of the of the kingdom, because it is one of the biggest contributors, if not the biggest contributor, to government revenues and funding the expenditure in the budget for the year 2024 is highly dependent on the distribution by Saudi Aramco. Obviously, it's a bonus for equity shareholders. They get a higher dividend, even though the profitability is lower. And I think that also acts to bolster the stock on the market, given the high yield that it would be generating for its investors.
Yeah, actually, as you said, that the Saudi government actually holds 82.2% of Aramco, of course, which is, I would say, it's a very big number.
Yes, but it used to be 100%. So, and also probably a trailblazer in the GCC when it comes to offering the what we call the NOC, the National Oil Company, which is typically owned 100% by the government, offering it to its citizens and to the market as a whole. And the result was effectively one of the most valuable listed companies on earth. Resides on the Tadawul, on the Saudi Stock Exchange. So it ticked off a lot of, you know, positives, ticked off a lot of boxes. You have a much bigger, deeper equity market because of the listing, even though it's less than 20% float. That's 20% of a massive $1 trillion company. So that is still extremely significant. The sale generated revenues for the Saudi government, which went back into the Saudi economy. So I would say overall, still very significant, even mm-hmm. though, as you mentioned, it is a minority share. It was one of the most significant sort of capital market activities of the last decade, I would say, in the region, listing of Aramco.
Yeah, as well, the company as well declared base dividends totaling $20.3 billion for the first quarter and performance-linked dividend distribution of $10.88 billion to be paid in the second quarter, which, by the way, it anticipates a total dividend of $124 to be declared in 2024, with $43.1 billion in performance-linked dividends, as reported, of course, by Reuters.
It's a lot of cash.
It is. It's I mean, I'm reading numbers and I'm like, oh my God, that's a lot of...
But that's a massive government budget at the same time. So you have to think of it that way. And it is the world's largest exporter of oil, Saudi Aramco. So you would expect numbers of that scale.
I mean, how do you think that this amount will reflect in the future, or how can it even reflect in the future in a way?
Of course, I mean, it is what funds the Saudi budget. So all the infrastructure expenditure, all the budget expenditure, the current expenditure, so salaries, building schools, building hospitals, providing services, upgrading the infrastructure of the country is all funded to mm-hmm. a large degree by that revenue. So I would not expect it to decline. The plan, though, is the dependence on these distributions to decline over over time, and that's the diversification sort of strategy in by the kingdom, is that government revenues are bolstered by other sources of income. Could include also listing of other government owned enterprises on the stock exchange, which gets like a payback to the Saudi government. But I suspect more of it will be sort of a recurring fashion from a growing economy and from a diversified economy. One example would be from tourism. Tourism is one of the top government revenue generators in the UAE today, right?
That's true.
And that is because, not just because of the economic activity it puts in there, but because also related tourism taxes and VAT taxes and so on by these tourists really bolsters the local and federal government budgets of the UAE. And there's a similar plan, naturally, in order to tap into Saudi Arabia's tourism potential to bolster that diversification and bolster that additional government revenues.
That is true. You know, we've seen Saudi Arabia completely turn a 180 degree after Mohammed bin Salman just decided to open up the country, whether it's media companies shifting there or allowing a lot of things that were once not allowed. So I don't know, do you
entertainment see... being one of them, tourism promotion being mm-hmm. another, events, the promotion of the Red Sea, which for me is the Saudi side is by far the most beautiful part of the Red Sea, at least from the places I've been, with a ton of potential for development, and as well as the what we call the MICE sector, I went to a couple of conferences in Saudi Arabia, extremely well attended, filled up hotels, so on. So, you know, across the board, all these changes have had a significantly positive impact on, you know, that part of the non-oil part of the Saudi economy.
How will this influence, or I would say, positively influence Saudi Arabia internationally, not only in the GCC region?
Whenever a country is more open to foreigners, people get to experience it better, get to understand it better, get to understand the underlying risk for their investment better. So undoubtedly, it is positive. And not to mention, it brings the country closer to the norm of the expectation of investors globally in terms of, you know, social norms and in terms of openness and accessibility and so on. So, but it has a huge potential. Now, of course, there are the major initiatives that happen, the huge projects that also attract a ton of foreign investment to take advantage of, and that in itself, having capital invested in the country, makes you closer to the country, makes you more interested in helping spread the word about the positive momentum in the country. So all of the above, you have people who are vested now in your success.
Agreed as well. In line of that, Finance Minister Mohammed Al-Jadaan recently indicated that adjustments to the kingdom's vision of for 2030 plan as necessary amid a challenging economic environment. Saudi Arabia could potentially raise up to $36.8 billion in finance in 2024.
Yep, and that's not even a lot, by the way, because Saudi Arabia starts from a low base when it comes to borrowing. Mm-hmm. So other countries of its scale probably have twice to three times the amount of sovereign debt that Saudi Arabia is looking to raise. So overall, this doesn't mean a bigger need for funding. Purely, it also means a more mature market that is more liquid, where the global market is willing and happy to lend the Saudi government the money.
Yeah, which is, by the way, it's very exciting, and I can for sure, like, coming from someone who I used to think of like Saudi Arabia as this very closed country that if you're going to go there, it's not, you know, like I can't do anything, right? But now to think of it in a way like, hey, I can do this and do that and do it's open for everyone, which is exciting.
Not just that, when you say 180, is that when before you saw it, especially as a woman, as a female, you know, restrictive on your options and your freedom and your ability, for example, to do business there and so on. It's gone 180 degrees in that today, actually, to make up for lost time, you're actually increasingly enabled as a woman to do a lot of these things.
That's
and encouraged
true.
To do so. There's particular effort in getting women, for example, entrepreneurs more active and involved in the Saudi economy, and you start to see some brilliant people come up with great solutions in the space. Of course, you're coming from a low base, so it's going to take a little bit of time
where
it becomes
true.
More prominent, but certainly a move in the right direction. I see it from friends of mine who, you know, who typically not consider expanding their business into Saudi Arabia previously simply because they are women and mm-hmm. they felt uncomfortable and not really sure doing that, today are just being emboldened and encouraged by everything that they are seeing and see the Saudi market as a great potential growth market for them.
Yeah, we do see that actually. Now back to home, back to Dubai. Dubai is set to introduce 30 plus new parks in the upcoming year. So in the upcoming year, Dubai is poised to introduce over 30 new parks, expanding its green spaces across the city. Now, while specific locations remain undisclosed, officials have indicated that some of these will be large-scale mega parks offering diverse, of course, opportunities, which is very exciting. You know, insights into the forthcoming parks were shared during the Arab travel market, and the varied nature of the upcoming parks were highlighted as reported by Al Khaleej Times. The parks will encompass mega parks, neighborhood parks, and smaller community play parks.
I'll tell you what, you may remember around a year and a half to 2 years ago, I can't recall exactly when, the announcement of the amount of public space that Dubai mm-hmm. is going to have by the year, and I think it was 2050. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm off, maybe it's around 2035, mm-hmm. but the pictures that we saw included so much green space.
Yeah.
And that was extremely encouraging. And I'll tell you what, as I'm involved in real estate to a large degree, and as I looked at different developments, one to me stood out, which was Dubai Hills, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a development where the developer intentionally created massive public space in order to create, you know, that sort of green community.
Yes.
For the residents. And the impact of that had on life and life quality of residents was massive, but also in terms of the value of the properties themselves. So you give up more of the land, what remains for public usage, what remains actually becomes more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a key learning, I think, in economics and human behavior. And I think it's very important to always allocate for public spaces in a city like Dubai. And I see that the adopted strategy is very much in line with that. You don't need to build everything. Not everything needs to be a road.
That is
not
true.
Everything needs to be a tower, right?
There
is a constant. And Dubai is amazing with the public spaces. The beaches over here probably are some of the best in the in the world, and how they're built. And I think the same will be the case for the green spaces that will be introduced.
Yes, which is very exciting, because it has been mentioned that it's over 190 parks are going to be developed, which is very exciting, because as well, I remember back then when I would drive around, and Dubai Hills was, oh my God, this very far community, the very far, oh my God, I would never go there. But now a lot of people do live there. And I would like to say that it's the new downtown Dubai, which is very exciting.
Without the traffic.
Yes, without the traffic. I mean, if you like maybe, I don't know, live close around, then it would not be a very filled with traffic area.
Yeah. I mean, if you're inside the area, if you're going outside, around. You're going to be faced with a standard Dubai traffic.
That is true, for sure.
Depends on where you're going, naturally.
Yes, for sure. Well, speaking of Dubai and traffic as well, Dubai hosted 5.2 million tourists in Q1. For now, that represents an 11% increase compared to the same period last year, according to Dubai Crown Prince Hamdan bin Mohammed via post on X. What do you think of that?
Great recovery in tourism, phenomenal numbers, phenomenal growth from the previous years. You see it on the streets, as you said, in the traffic.
Oh, yeah.
You see it at occupancy rates in hotels. I think the average was around 83% for the first quarter of the year, which is certainly a phenomenal number. Globally, to have occupancy rate of that much for your hotels means extremely healthy tourism sector for sure. I'm glad to see there's no slowdown. You see it in also the number of arrivals coming in and the traffic through the airport and so on. So we're back.
We're back, and I am fearing for June, July, and August. I actually am fearing that, because, like as you said, you know, like we can see that actually in Dubai happening now. But you said something correctly, which is, by the way, the growth rate was for 83%, which is really nice. And as well, it is expected to grow even more, which of course is going to grow, you know, with all of the parks opening. And all of
other attractions, other infrastructure,
yes.
Expanding the capacity of the airport, adding planes, adding more lines and connections to the to the world. More hotel rooms are being built. Down the line, casino in Ras Al Khaimah, I'm sure that's going to have its own kind of kind of traffic. So, there is a macro global concern.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Interest rates have been high for a while. That's starting to bite into people's, ability to spend on things like vacations. You start also probably reducing the amount of days that you stay, some based on budgetary concerns and so on. But we've not seen, the headwinds of that really hit us yet over here in terms of arrivals. That is a good sign that we are resilient in terms of attractiveness as a destination. And I wouldn't bet against more growth next year.
Well, Dubai is Dubai. All it does is just continue growing no matter what. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Waleed. It was lovely, honestly, sitting and talking to you.
It's my pleasure.
And
lovely being here.
Yeah, which is really nice. I really hope all of our viewers just really enjoyed the talk. It was all about tourism, oil, and more tourism, of course.
And a bit of money.
So, well, thank you. And we will be looking forward to having you join us again next Wednesday.
We'll be there.
Hello. Hello and welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. Joining me is the Managing Director, Ghamer Aqad of Book My Pet, the amazing app that we are all looking for. I'm personally looking for. I have a lot of questions. Hello, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me today.
Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
So I have a lot of questions for you. First of all, what inspired you to create Book My Pet, and how did your experience in the global pet industry influence the development?
So definitely, I have been a pet parent for all my life. So we've been raised with pets, and I've been having a pet for all my life. So basically, that's the biggest drive for me. Working in the global pet industry for probably most of my career really showed me how significant and how the growth is definitely very strong in this industry. And it's really like an untapped market here in the GCC. So putting those two together, so definitely the passion, looking for something that I would love to do. So basically that was the biggest motivating factor for me. And definitely looking at the industry and the market. There is a market for such a thing. And we would like to bring technology to disrupt that market when it comes to pet care. In the GCC and hopefully in MENA as well as we expand along.
That's beautiful. So if you can elaborate more on how Book My Pet simplifies the pet care booking process and what sets it apart from, you know, traditional methods.
Definitely. So imagine a world today where you have to order food on Google or you have to look for the restaurants right now without the apps that we're used to today. So this is a similar experience that we have in the pet industry today, focusing more on pet care. So pet care meaning really caring for your pets. These types of services like grooming, which happens often frequently, boarding when you travel, especially living in the GCC, you know, majority of expat community here that we keep traveling on business or back to our families. So we really need a solution where we can find the pet hotels when we need them and the ones with the highest quality and standards as well, because, you know, these pets are like part of our family. And then you have the veterinary clinics as well, and then you have the daycare. So I'll take you a step back. Book My Pet really has a strong mission in basically promoting pet ownership as a whole. You know, we understand as a company and as pet parents ourselves, the unconditional love that pets bring to our family and bring to ourselves as well. And we believe that we want to make sure that everybody here in the UAE and beyond as well in MENA have that same experience. Now, we focus on tackling the challenges of potential pet parents and why do they, for example, have those thoughts that, I'm just going to push that decision away. So we look at these factors. So one of them is expenses, right? So today, if you want to find, for example, a veterinary clinic that is affordable and at a high quality as well, the only option you have is to find them online yourself or to call different places, right? Which becomes a challenge, especially in the busy lives that we live in today. So Book My Pet offers that experience, right? So you can find the veterinary clinic that has the highest quality because we onboard verified and top-rated providers as well. There is a verification process. Mm-hmm. And then you can find the ones that you want based on the facilities or the preferences that you require. So whether it was price, whether it was certain facilities, whether it was location, whether it was rating, genuine reviews, where people actually, when they book a service on Book My Pet, that enables them to share a review versus the other methods of sharing reviews where anybody can share reviews, right? So that kind of transparency and that kind of access really helps pet parents find the exact pet care providers that they want, explore the options, right? So a lot of, here in the GCC, we're a new pet community, right? Mm-hmm. So compared to, for example, the US or Europe, it's a really established market there. However, yeah. Here it's a growing market.
That is true.
And it was really pushed a lot by Corona, by the pandemic, where a lot of people were lonely, a lot of people were stuck at home. And that's really where accelerated the decision. Well, you know what? I think it's time to get a pet in the house. And really what Book My Pet does is try to educate, you know, that there are these kinds of services. So there are pet hotels, you know, that mm-hmm. would care for your furry friend as if they were just at home. There are different veterinary clinic options that you can opt for as well. So it's not just, you know, the myth of that, no, vet expenses are extremely expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's also daycare, you know. So a lot of challenges, for example, that people have and that actually come and ask us is, you know, I don't want to get a pet because I'm always at work. So I don't want to leave them at home, you know, because I don't want them to go and ruin my couch or I don't want them to feel stressed. So we educate them that there are daycare centers, you know, where they take care of your dog or your cat, make sure that they're playing, make sure that they're feeding, make sure that they're drinking water, and then they're coming back home safe. So similar to baby nurseries, right, or daycare.
That is true. Let me say, I am a criminal of that. I am. I really am. And yeah, but maybe if I knew the application was there beforehand, I would have for sure used it. So how do you ensure trust and reliability, of course, in connecting pet owners with service providers through Book My Pet?
So our verification process really is the number one step here. So we don't onboard any provider, right? So we try to filter as much as possible top-rated providers. We have our own guidelines, also in line with Dubai Municipality guidelines, to make sure that every option that we have on the app is a verified provider and a top-rated provider. Now, definitely, it's a continuous improvement process, right? So we continue seeing how the quality reviews are, how the process is. And as I said before, it's really an industry that lags behind a bit versus other industries like the hotel businesses, like the food businesses. So that's something that's developing. And we feel Book My Pet is really poised at leading the way in terms of standardizing the quality, standardizing the services, the prices, from a pet parent perspective. However, from a business perspective as well, we help pet businesses really improve on their customer acquisition, on really basically increasing their reach and showing basically pet parents what services they provide, what is the quality, etc. and so forth. So basically, with those together and a continuous improvement of learning from a provider side, from our side as well, and from pet parents, we hopefully will get to a level where trust and quality is our utmost.
So part. Let's say like several pet daycares come and they want to, I would say, register at your application.
Yes.
What's the process for them to actually, I would say, be featured on your application?
So the process is, so usually what's happening now is we're getting a lot of inquiries, right? Mm-hmm. So the onboarding pipeline is now becoming a bit longer than usual because mm-hmm. we have a bit of traffic on that side. What we do is first our operations team would basically have a certain requirement list. So the number one requirement is definitely legal. So trade license, make sure everything is legal. Everything from a Dubai municipality standard is met because Dubai municipality have their own regulations as well for boarding, daycare, veterinary clinics and everything. So we make sure that the legal part is 100% verified. And then we have our own guidelines, right? So what is a daycare offers? Like what supervision in terms of safety, in terms of play areas. And then basically once we see that the criteria is met, we actually have a bit of a kind of an online search as well to understand the reviews of those daycare centers. How do people view them that have experienced them, and then we onboard them. So starts with the contract and then the onboarding form where we basically have every single information that is outlined is exactly transparent to the consumers. One of our main guidelines is that pet parents that come on Book My Pet do not pay a cent extra. So mm-hmm. for example, if the price of a grooming company or a daycare company is 50 dirhams, they would pay 50 dirhams on the application. And mm-hmm. the beauty about this is that you get cash back, so sort of like a loyalty program mm-hmm. that you can apply across our 180 provider network. So say, for example, you enjoy daycare, you get cash back, and then you can use it for your annual vaccine with a different veterinary clinic or your frequent monthly mobile grooming session. So it really creates kind of, you know, the pet care ecosystem where it promotes people to care for their pets as well. You know, a lot of people delay these types of services, you know, for their pets, but actually Book My Pet tries to kind of, you know, help promote that and in a way grow the industry as well from that perspective.
That is very cool. I mean, all I can think of right now is I wish I knew.
What service, you know, what, do you want to go for?
About the application. So, all right, now if you can give us some insights into the technology behind the app and how it enhances the user experience for both pet parents and service providers.
Definitely. So the technology for pet parents, so starting with pet mm-hmm. parents. Right now, every pet parent in the UAE has to have a vaccination record for their pet that gets updated every year. And then there's a DM registration tag that you need to get every year. So these are basically manual papers, right, that you keep in a drawer somewhere, or sometimes they get lost. So on Book My Pet, every pet that you have has the pet passport already on the profile. So the vaccines are there, the pictures of the vaccine booklets are there, every single information about your pet, whether it was medical conditions or it was the color, the breed, age, weight, etc. Everything that a provider needs to confirm a certain service. Okay, because right now in the UAE, you cannot book any service if your dog or cat is not vaccinated fully, mm-hmm. as per the requirement from the government, and of course to protect other animals as well during the service. So that is the first thing that we are trying to go paperless with digital vaccines and digital, basically, paper records of the pets. That's number one. Number two, it's a personalized application, right? So when I go in, when I sign into the app, I will choose my dog. So let's say I have a dog and a cat, which I actually do. So I will pick my cat. Everything on the app will be personalized in terms of the experience for my specific cat. It will show me what have I previously booked, what offers are existing, what are the featured partners. You know, so it will make my customer journey extremely easy. It will offer me reminders whenever my vaccine expires. So kinds of, you know, here's a month reminder, please go and book your vaccine. And we are actually offering discounts for those. So we're promoting people to go and get their dogs and cats vaccinated. Now, we've seen that there's a lot of cases where people are not vaccinating. So we try to encourage using technology as well that, you know what, there's a reminder, go and get your dog or cat vaccinated for their health and safety and for others as well. So the third and most important thing is the technology allows us to give a loyalty program across the whole network, which is the most important thing, right? Because one of the biggest challenges for people to get pets is that they would tell you it's expensive. So how do we break that? You know, how do we break that myth is really to give them enough tools to kind of break the habit of thinking that it's expensive. No, if you go and book my pet, you will actually have a lot of savings from one perspective, which is a loyalty program, cashback we talked about. And then from the second is that Book My Pet is an avenue for only pet care providers. So guess what happens when you have all of the pet care providers in one environment? They compete. So prices start getting even lower. And that's more value proposition that we add to pet parents as well, which is very in line with our mission to promote pet ownership in the UAE and hopefully once we expand in the region. Of course, the filters and how easy it is to find exactly what you're looking for. The next thing from a pet care provider perspective, we offer them a scheduling software, a backend, where basically it has a CRM so they can add their customers. They can actually manage their capacity by groomer, by room, for example, for boarding facility, by doctor for veterinary clinics. They also have a scheduling system where they can basically organize the Book My Pet bookings that they receive and their own internal bookings as well, where it makes it more streamlined, makes it efficient, and they have all the records there. So every time they want to download all the list of their bookings, you know, for reconciliation, for seeing how they're progressing, it's there.
It's there.
And all their prices and services are there. They can always kind of, you know, benchmark against the industry. So how is my price looking versus the average? Is it above? Is it below? So it really helps them with a lot of insights and definitely scheduling tools to manage their operation efficiently.
Well, because we're running out of time, so I would like to ask you one last question is if you can discuss any upcoming features or initiatives that Book My Pet is working on to continue meeting, you know, the needs of pet owners and service providers in the UAE.
So definitely now we just secured our pre-seed investment with Access Bridge Ventures and then a company as well called Skelmore Holding. So with this seed funding, the pre-seed funding that we just completed, we're going to continue investing in our technology. So make it more easier, make it more seamless, you know, really enhance on the engagement tools to kind of promote the industry and promote our users. Also, as well, investing in the scheduling software, make it more up to standard and make it really something that we're proud of and something that a flagship coming out of the UAE. As you know, we participated in the Global Nestle Accelerator Program, which is a global pet tech company program, and we've actually won. So the UAE is actually a flagship globally in the pet tech
Congrats.
Industry now. Yes, and basically, we're looking to add more and more services. So we want to become a one-stop shop where basically every pet parent, the only app they would need is Book My Pet, and then expand it regionally, hopefully in the coming period into Saudi Arabia and then beyond. So spreading the happiness across the region.
Thank you so much. You even have your beautiful mug and things with you. But thank you so much. This brings
You're
us to the
welcome.
End of our interview and the end of course, our show. But before we end the show, how can people find you?
So go on bookmypet.com or you can go on the App Store or the Android Store and just search Book My Pet, download the app and immediately start booking.
It's as simple as that. Guys, don't forget to do that if you've got pets. And this brings us to the end of the show. Goodbye from me and see you tomorrow.
Thank
Libna, hopefully, will be here.
Thank you
so
much,
Amit, for being here. Thank you.